It's Friday, the 23rd of August, and this is the Monocle Minute. Today,
Navalny is undoubtedly a symbol for the opposition movement, so people will be relieved to see him out. But I think it's now gone way beyond Navalny.
Russian opposition leader Alexei Navalny is due to walk free from prison. We'll hear from the Russia analyst Stephen Diel on what his release could mean for the ongoing protests. Plus, the US city of Phoenix gets set to vote on a proposal that could ban further light rail construction. North Macedonia reaps the rewards of its recent change of name. And Monocle's Andrew Muller salutes a favourite of the skies and explains why certain aircraft are better at reminding us of the wonders of air travel. I'm Ben Rylan in London. The Monocle Minute starts now. Russian activist and opposition leader Alexei Navalny has become more of a mascot than a leader, primarily because government strongmen have made a habit of arresting him on trumped-up charges as soon as there's any whiff of unrest. He was due to leave prison today, having completed a 30-day sentence following protests against the Kremlin's suppression of opposition candidates in the 2019 Moscow City Duma elections. I'm joined in the studio by the Russia analyst Stephen Diel. Stephen, these protests that have ostensibly put Navalny in prison, they seem to have caught a lot of people by surprise, not least, of course, the Russian government. Remind us, how did this all start?
The recent protests started when the lists were put forward for people to take part in the Moscow City government elections. So not the national government, just the government of the city of Moscow. And those elections are going to take place in September. In order to be a candidate, you had to gather 10,000 signatures. And when candidates submitted their list of people who'd supported them, you know, you had to put the usual thing. You put your name, address, contact details. The Moscow Electoral Commission ruled out those that they didn't like, basically, by saying, oh, these don't count. You know, there's an address missing. I can't read this. Or it came out with the most ridiculous excuses and thus excluded from the ballot paper, basically anyone who didn't agree with President Putin. So those who were excluded started making a fuss about this, particularly on social media. Many young Russians, particularly now, are very, very social media savvy, and then called for protest. They said, you know, this is absurd. It's something of a new step. It has happened in the past, but often Russians think, they shrug their shoulders and say, well, the elections are rigged. So actually to exclude so many people early on, I think that was possibly the authorities' first mistake, because they were then shocked, the authorities were shocked by the size of the demonstrations. And there's been a series of demonstrations getting increasingly large, faced by an increasingly large number of police and riot police. And yet people haven't been frightened off by that.
Stephen, Germany's foreign minister Heiko Maas met his Russian counterpart Sergei Lavrov on Wednesday. They reportedly argued over Moscow's claim that Western media has been interfering in Russian affairs and, I suppose, in other words, helping fuel the protests. Now, Maas said that the accusation was unrealistic. What's driving that suspicion of foreign meddling in Russia?
This is not suspicion from Russia. This is a classic example of Russian disinformation. There is not Western influence on this. These are genuine Russian people rising up and protesting on the streets because they're unhappy with their social situation and specifically with the way in which the build-up to these elections has been held. It is unfortunately so typical of the Putin regime to turn it on its head and say, you know, oh, it's foreign interference. It is not foreign interference. It's as simple as that. Lavrov is one of the greatest proponents of Russian disinformation, along with Putin. Unfortunately, you know, there is so little of what they say that you can believe. And in this case, you know, this is just absolute nonsense.
Stephen, Alexei Navalny was due to leave prison today. If and when he does eventually walk free, what, if anything, will that mean for the protests?
Navalny is undoubtedly a symbol for the opposition movement, and so people will be relieved, particularly as when he was in prison on this occasion, he was ill, he was taken to a hospital bed for 24 hours or so. So people will be relieved to see him out. So in a sense, he's a figurehead, but I think it's now gone way beyond Navalny. Navalny's big issue has been corruption at the top. That's what he's really stressed, and he's produced a series of very well-made films, which are all on YouTube, showing the extent of corruption, the number of houses that the Russian elite own, the yachts they have, and so on. So in that sense, you know, he's pushed the case forward for saying how corrupt the people at the top are. But I think that what we've seen with these recent demonstrations, the fact that, you know, they went ahead even after Navalny was imprisoned, you actually had a bigger demonstration than before. Yes, he's there, but he's not the only cause for it now. You know, the more and more people are seeing that because there's clear cheating in this election, because their living standards have fallen, because the level of poverty is rising, those are things that are actually uniting people far more than Navalny could. He may have been the spark that ignited protest within the last couple of years, but I think his relevance to it actually is now slightly less important than it was a couple of years ago. It's not now just about Navalny. It's gone a long way beyond that.
Stephen DL, always good to get your insights. Thank you. Now to the U.S. city of Phoenix, where a fight for the Arizona state capital's transit future is speeding up.
In 2015, voters approved a $31.5 billion sales to triple the length of light rail lines in Phoenix, which after opening in 2008, now carry 50,000 riders daily. But a new ballot measure, Proposition 105, threatens to axe further plans to expand and instead put money towards building roads. Proposition 105 supporters fear light rail construction will kill local businesses. Others disagree, such as the city's mayor, Kate Gallego. She says that light has allowed her city to grow vertically rather than outwards. It's brought investment and has attracted a more creative workforce. While early voting has been underway since the 31st of July, expect campaigners on both sides to be active this weekend before the city votes on the 27th of August.
The long-running process of changing the name of what is now North Macedonia has brought about plenty of tense times. But with that question now resolved, the country is finally free to focus on its future.
There is a jubilant atmosphere in Skopje as the Republic of North Macedonia reaps the economic rewards of resolving its long-running naming dispute with Greece. A proud new member of NATO, the country has hopes of accession to the European Union further down the line. Yes, some countries are trying to get in. Ivana Tufekcic is the country's youngest MP at just 26. She told Monocle that people aren't necessarily talking about the name change. The priority, it seems, is the economy. Smart money already seems to be flooding in. Last year, foreign investment was double the average of the previous 5 years, and there are opportunities in industries ranging from automotive to bedding.
Finally today, Monocle's Andrew Muller sings the praises of the Embraer 190 aircraft, an everyday workhorse that reminds passengers of the wonders of air travel, whilst also providing a dash of Brazilian panache.
Airlines labour to make air travel seem a mundane endeavour. It's not hard to see why. Persuading us as a species to be hurtled through the skies at 1,000 kilometres an hour was always going to require reassurance. But it means that the default attitude to the marvel of air travel is one of irritability and complacency. I am one of those irritable and complacent air passengers. I do not look forward to getting on, and I look forward very much to getting off. Until very recently, regarding any make or model of commercial passenger plane with affection would have struck me as preposterous. What changed was a run of flights between European hubs, London City, Dublin, Frankfurt, Zurich, among others, aboard Brazilian-built Embraer 190s. The 190 is a smallish single-aisle airliner seating about 100 passengers. It's popular with airlines operating short hops in Europe and the Americas. To date, 566 190s and 172 of its sister 195 have been delivered. And much to my surprise, I've discovered that I enjoy enjoy them. It's partly, and call me superficial, down to appearances. The 190 is an elegant presence on the apron. This is especially noticeable at airports such as London City, where passengers board by walking across the tarmac. Where most Boeings and Airbuses are very much aircraft, with all the ponderous utilitarian drabness the term suggests, the svelte 190 is emphatically a jet. Inside, the 190 makes your trip seem as much adventure as commute. There are usually just two seats either side of the aisle. At the window, the curvature of the fuselage is distinct enough that you can't be fooled into thinking yourself aboard some kind of airborne tram. It feels like a leather helmet, goggles and raffish scarf would not be inappropriate. There's also something to be said for a lack of seatback screens, implicit encouragement to enjoy the view and the flight for its own sake. It's a great advertisement for flying, and for Brazil as well, and while it's risky to read too much of a national character into an item of machinery, if ever an aeroplane deserved blue shorts and a gold shirt with green collar, the 190 does. For Monocle 24, I'm Andrew Mullett.
That's all in today's program. You can read and subscribe to our daily email bulletin at our website, monocle.com. I'm Ben Ryland. The Monocle Minute returns on Monday. Enjoy your weekend.